Konnichiwa, and welcome to the FIBA Series podcast. F1 and its support series might be on a springtime break, but for the FIBA Series world, it continues turning this April with many championships starting up. Freca, Euroformula, GB3, GB4, plus F4 championships in Italy, France, Denmark, Britain, NACAM, more, all getting underway this month. But today, we're turning our attention to the fastest FIBA Series of them all, Super Formula. I'm your host, Jim Kimberley, and there are probably only a few people less qualified than I am to guide you through this Japanese racing series. But fortunately, I have three voices alongside me who will make sense of it all and no doubt correct my name pronunciations over the next 45 minutes or so. Firstly, let me introduce a first for the podcast. We have the fortune of having a reporter from another publication joining us to give some additional expertise on the subject. I'm delighted to welcome the motorsport.com reporter for Japanese motorsport to the podcast, Jamie Klein. How are you today?
Hello, Jim. Yeah, it's great to be on here. Thanks for having me. Yeah, it's a little bit later in the day here in Japan. So I'd say I'm maybe not at my peak alertness. Already been quite a busy day of writing stuff. But I'm looking forward to digging into some of the stuff that happened last weekend, because it was a really, really fun weekend.
Well, I always find when I do my write-ups on the Monday that it sort of gets my brain in gear to know what's going on, but I completely echo the thoughts of being exhausted after doing a lot of words. Also, we have joining Jamie two names that long-term listeners are sure to know. The first one is the one whose voice filled your ears this weekend, assuming you listen to the coverage on motorsport.tv. From covering Formula Regional Middle Eastern Championship and editing for FIDA Series, now back commentating on Super Formula, a very busy man. Welcome back, Jake Sanson.
Thank you very much, Jim. Good to be back on the podcast again. And yes, crazy busy. It's really starting to get into the proper freight train of the season. It's just going to keep on coming. And Super Formula is definitely a very exciting part of that for me.
Very different speeds from a freight train, but I love the analogy completely. It is just coming thick and fast right now. And finally, we have the first appearance of my favorite FIDA Series pundit, who joins me on the podcast once again with his enthusiasm. Standing up, are you, René Oudman? You're looking as happy as ever, and your enthusiasm last year got me watching Super Formula this year. How are you today?
Yeah, I'm fine. Thanks for having me, Jim. I was thinking about this. We've got a Jim, a Jake, and a Jamie on the podcast, so I might change my name to Jenna. But it's like Jake just said, the steam training is rolling again. Super Formula kicked off. Yeah, we are glad that everything is underway, and it was a hell of a weekend, Jim. I can tell you that.
Still Jenna from the block, René? But thank you for coming back on. We'll ignore that. Terrible, terrible joke. Before we get started, if you enjoy the podcast, please like, comments, and subscribe if you're watching on YouTube, or leave a rating or review if you're listening on Spotify or another podcast platform. Also, apologies for any technical issues are purely on my side. I've tried my best to edit them out, but you may hear an audio glitch or two, so I do apologize. And equally, if you are watching on YouTube, it may freeze every now and again, but it should be fairly listenable. But in any case, if you happen to be listening on Spotify or watching on YouTube, you can take part in the podcast polls we've been running. Last week, in honor of F2 and F3's visit to Australia, we asked if you wanted the championships to be returning next year. Even though the time zone sucked, I'm not surprised that it was an overwhelming yes on both YouTube and Spotify. 84% of YouTubers want another trip to the land of Jack Doohan and Oscar Piastri, while 96% of Spotify listeners are in favour of Albert Park hosting FIDA Series again. This week, with the AlphaTauri 2024 seat opening up, I want to know, between Liam Lawson and Ayumu Iwasa, who are both shining so bright in 2023 so far, as well as some other Red Bull drivers, which driver you want to see in the AlphaTauri seat for 2024. You can check out our YouTube channel or scroll down on Spotify to cast your vote, and I'll read out the results on the next episode. And while you're there, if you haven't already rated us or subscribed, please take the 10 seconds to do so. It really does help us out. Let's whiz through and start with Super Formula. It's all we're going to talk about this week. And thanks to some pesky racing down under last weekend, we didn't get to preview the championship before races 1 and 2. And I do want to have an overview from the three of you about the season as a whole, but we can't just ignore the fact that we're 2 races down in a 9-race calendar. So let's start out with all the racing action from Fuji. Jamie, we had some domination from the teams and driver champions, and they're already atop the championship. But the story of the weekend from me as a newcomer to Super Formula was a certain rookie, Liam Lawson, impressing with a win in race one. How impressive was that, and how do you think it will affect the team dynamic?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think not only for the international fans, but I think, from the Japanese perspective as well, for Lawson to come in, beat Nojiri, his teammate, the first time of asking, Tomoki Nojiri, of course, the defending two-time champion and basically the guy that's made the championship his own the last 2 years. We should mention that it was slightly unusual circumstances because Friday practice was cancelled because of bad weather. So they went into Saturday's first quali session completely green. And perhaps that helped Lawson a little bit. We know how adaptable he's been in many different categories. Obviously, DTM a couple of years ago, sort of standing out in my memory as well. But he really just made the most of the opportunity presented to him by the fact that Mugen is by far the strongest team in this category at the moment. They made the best transition with this new SF23 car. And basically, he executed a perfect undercut strategy on Nojiri halfway through the race, did a blistering outlap, which made the difference. I was just checking the lap time data. His outlap was 2.5 seconds faster than Nojiri. You can factor in probably about half a second with a slightly faster stop, but even so, hugely impressive from Lawson. So I think in terms of the team dynamic, of course, the following race, Nojiri got his own back. He managed to win that race. Lawson was fifth after a penalty, which I'm sure we'll get into in a little bit more detail afterwards. But I think the dynamic now is basically the established king of the series. And he said it himself, he is now racing to defend the honour of the series itself, to preserve the reputation of Super Formula against the newcomer Lawson, who comes in and, you know, somebody could say, well, he's made them all look like amateurs just by coming in and winning first time out. Although obviously it's extremely rare, and, you know, we'll get into the history of it as well, I'm sure. But I think that is the dynamic now. It is Nojiri representing the establishment and Lawson representing the, you know, the young guns, the international guys who come in from time to time and shake up the order.
Is it, and excuse me if this sounds really like a rookie question for about a rookie, but is it akin to Hamilton coming in, was it 2007, with Alonso as a double champion and then immediately going on par with him in those first results?
Yeah, I think there is an element of that. I mean, I don't think it's going to get as fractious because I think just the personalities involved. You know, Nojiri is not Fernando Alonso. He's not going to start laying traps for Lawson or using political underhand methods or anything like that. He was actually very welcoming to Lawson in the early stages. I mean, when we rewind to last December for the rookie test, which Nojiri didn't actually drive in, they just ran the one car for Lawson. But Nojiri was there. He was helping the team. He was basically helping his teammate get up to speed. Perhaps at the time, he didn't know just how good Lawson was or just what a threat he would turn out to be. So probably the relationship's already changed to some degree, but I don't think it's going to go quite down that sort of self-destructive path. Also because Nojiri knows that Lawson is just, it's a one and done. Lawson's here for this year and probably this year only, because he'll either get to F1 or Red Bull say, well, we're not giving you another chance, or if we do, it's not going to be in this category. So slightly different circumstances, but I think there is an element just in terms of the sheer, like you say, the ability for Lawson to get on a par with the established driver so quickly is definitely carries a few echoes of 2007.
Just to add to what Jamie was saying, it's interesting. We actually kind of talked about that a little bit in coverage. We kind of made the Alonso Hamilton comparison, but we also made the comparison of Damon Hill and Jacques Villeneuve, Formula One 1996. We actually thought that was probably a more relevant comparison to make. You know, the fact that Damon was the star of his team and basically led the Williams team. And then Jacques Villeneuve came in as a whirling dervish and showed him up in the first race. He didn't beat him, but he certainly showed him how to do it. And we kind of think that that's more the sort of comparison that works. We think it's going to fit more that way than it will be Alonso and Hamilton. I don't think it'll be quite as fractious, like Jamie says, but I think the Hill-Villeneuve comparison is probably a little bit more accurate than the Alonso-Hamilton one.
I find it fascinating, again, as a newcomer to it, when you... I heard the Villeneuve comparison, but in both instances, what happened to the champion in the year after, where both of them left that team. So who knows? And you like to say, Formula One and Super Formula is a very, very different beast. But Jake, you called all the action, and you've called the action before, so you know a lot about Super Formula. The cars look terrific. I mean, I said this to Rene before, the liveries are some of the best liveries I think you have in racing. But aside from that, the new SF23 car, stunning, and potentially, it's more of a race car than a Formula One car. It's the right size, for one, and looks spectacular. And that does make a difference, no matter what people say. And there's a lot more to it than that. But what are your takeaways from Super Formula 2023 from Fuji so far, Jake?
I think what's really important to remember is that this is a new car. It's not exactly a new era, but it's definitely the sort of the beginning of Super Formula's future endeavor to be as carbon neutral as humanly possible. You know, the B-Comp car that they've basically come up with aero is supposed to be 75% more carbon neutral than in previous years. The tires for this year are made from, you know, carbon neutral equipment. And I think there's been a hint at some point that the biofuels that are being tested at the championships are probably going to go here as well in the future. So it's quite important that the aesthetics of the product and the ethos of the product doesn't take away from the racing. And what this weekend has really taught to me is that it's not going to, which is really, really nice. You know, the racing this weekend across both races has been just as entertaining as it has been over the last 2-3 seasons. We've had such an incredible amount of talent come through on the starting grid again. The rookies have got up to speed very, very quickly, not just Lawson either, but also Raoul Hyman and Chen Bologbassi. You know, they really held themselves well under the circumstances. The B-Max that Raoul Hyman was in had multiple problems over the course of the weekend, so we didn't really get to see everything from him. Chen, you know, a lot of people have criticized him in the last 2 or 3 seasons that his staying power and his consistency has been rather off the boil. And for him to come through from 20th on the grid and score a point, several points on his debut in Super Formula is actually really telling. You know, there is talent there. There is ability. And for him to be on the same playing field as drivers who have been in Super Formula for 5, 6, 7 seasons and are the pinnacle of the sport there, you know, it really does show that the quality of the talent, both in Japan and internationally, to come together is really strong. And that's what the core factor of Super Formula is. A lot of people in Japan see Super Formula as the pinnacle. You know, Formula One is unrealistic, it's unattainable, but Super Formula, you can build a really strong career. And it's one of those unique formulas where, yes, it is a feeder series, but it's also a career path for a lot of drivers in that part of the world. You know, you really can spend 6, 7, 8 seasons there and build a working job. You can build a career. So it's one of those rare single-seater series that is very important in and of its own right. It's not just a path to Formula One. You know, you can have great racing and great motorsport there in its own right. And that's what I think really separates Super Formula from a lot of the other feeder series. Yes, it is a career path up the ladder, but you can sustain a career. And I think that's really important. And it's why Tomoki Nigiri was so emotional, I think, after race two, winning, because it was kind of a staying point of proving that, you know, the Japanese drivers that are here are not just here to be outclassed by the Europeans coming in and showing us up. You know, we are world class. We are just as good, if not better, than a lot of the drivers in Europe and in Formula One. And it was so important to him that he proved that. But the racecraft has been fantastic. You know, we had a fantastic 4-way battle for third position yesterday between 4 exceptional talents that ran all the way through to the end of the race from the start. You know, it's very rare that a battle, even with a safety car in the middle and pit stops and everything, literally goes from lap 1 to the end of the race. And that happens regularly in Super Formula. And for that to happen again this weekend in the first round, it shows that the quality of the racing, the quality of the product, if anything, it's just got better rather than diminished. So 2023 is going to be amazing. What I take from the first weekend is that The championship has only just got started. It's going to be one of the closest championships in world motorsport, never mind in Japanese motorsport, that we're going to see in 2023. I can't wait.
Yeah, I just wanted to jump in very quickly and add that Japan feels very much open for business again to the outside world, because it's important to remember we've been through three seasons where the number of foreign drivers has been extremely limited. At one stage, I think we were down to one foreign driver, I think, when Sascha Fenestraz was missing for most of 21 because of his visa issues. I think we just had Tatiana Calderon at one stage. To have this influx of new talent, I think, is important. And also, from a feeder series perspective, Super Formula Lights, Enzo Trulli is there this year. David Vidales is there this year. Igor Fraga is coming back from a couple of years on the sidelines, having moved, from Brazil to Japan. He's half Japanese, we should also bear in mind. Actually, just correct myself, he's Brazilian, but he was born in Japan and spent the first 10 or so years of his life in Japan. So the point is, there's a lot more in Super Formula and Super Formula Lights. There's a lot more foreign drivers arriving, and I think that trend is only going to accelerate in the next couple of years.
It's like a pent-up excitement to get in there. But if this weekend's anything to go by, you can see why. And this weekend, there were lovely moves throughout the field, Rene. But there were also pit stop disasters. There were crashes. Cold tyre nightmares, kind of like what you see in F3, F2. Well, F2, should I say, not F3. And also reminding me why we should ban tyre blankets immediately in Formula One. But for a newcomer like me, Rene, is what we saw in Fuji indicative of the season to come?
Yes, and I hope no. Because, like Jake said, the racecraft in Super Formula, like the races you see, is just an hour straight action. It has been for like 50 years. This is the 50th year of top-class racing in Japan, and it will probably always stay so. On the other hand, like Jamie touched on, Team Mugen was extremely comfortable, was looking extremely comfortable. They won both races. They stood on pole position for both races. They've got probably the best drivers in the series, bar Ryo Hirakawa. It looked very promising, though I think several teams need to step up to raise their game to make this season be a more horse race, more than only the two Team Mugen guys. Obviously, Ritomo Miyata had a good race. Sho Tsuboi was finally back again. However, he has always been good at Fuji Speedway, so we will see. What's that, Jim?
I saw it was there, but I also saw it wasn't there for long enough. Particularly, was it race one with the being crashed into? Sadly.
Yeah. It would be good for Sho to be up there again. And when he drove fastest laps in last year's preseason testing, everyone was expecting for him to come back. Though it didn't really happen last year, it didn't really click. Maybe Jamie can tell more about it, as it was due to his chassis, I heard. But it's looking promising. And I mean, the action was like it's always been in Super Formula, Jim. It was fantastic. And I can't wait for the next race. And the next race is already in 2 weeks' time.
Got Super GT as well in the week in between. So, there's really no rest for the wicked. But actually, to pick up on the other teams needing to step up, I was pretty disappointed by Team Impel, actually, just from a sheer operational point of view, and plus the fact that they've not got on top of their qualifying woes at all. Hirakawa qualifying P7 for both races. I did speak to him briefly after the second race. He already had that strange penalty, which turned out to be for an illegal practice start on the grid because he didn't do the warm-up, so they needed to do a practice start, even if it was just a couple of yards, really, just behind his grid box, but that turned out to be illegal. That's why I got the penalty. But just these operational things that, cost them so dearly, and combined with the lack of qualifying speed, we saw here at Kawa's race pace, there's nothing wrong with it, same as last year. But you're just going to beat Nigeria and Mugen if you're always starting P7, and especially so if you're picking up needless penalties for procedural things.
Speaking of the procedural things, Jamie, that it's procedural in a lot of motorsports, and we had that pass for the lead essentially happen in the pit lane in race two when Najiri got by Uyu. And it's under the safety car. I've seen stuff like this happen in other championships. And it's not how any race fan wants to see a race get won. I want to kind of go through all of us, I suppose, but should those rules be changed? Or is it just one of these things, it's luck of the draw and you take advantage and everyone has the same opportunity? Jamie, do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, no, actually, I think I said it at the time, they should definitely change the rules because the lap 10 pit stop window rule, in my opinion, is just pointless. Just to give you a bit of background, it was introduced, I think it was sort of trialed towards the end of 2019 when refueling was still a thing. And the idea of it was to kind of stamp out drivers getting lucky with an early safety car, which you can kind of see the logic of. But at the same time, if you have a safety car around the pit window, then it doesn't solve the problem at all. So I think a much more sensible solution would be to simply close the pit lane when there's a safety car, like they do in Super GT and, you know, numerous other forms of motorsport, because there's no refueling. You haven't been in danger of running out of fuel. I mean, that's a separate debate whether that should be brought back. But assuming they stick with this format, to me, that just seems like a way more sensible way to approach it. If they want to stop people getting lucky, then that surely seems like a no-brainer to me, but I don't know what the other guys think.
Rene, any thoughts?
Yeah, I do think alike. Look, you can't make your pit stop before lap this and that. It was 10 this time around. Sometimes we see drivers trying to be lucky to extend their stints, and they box at like two laps before the finish or one lap before the finish. I think it should be or 10 laps from the start and 10 laps until the finish, or just completely open. And like Jamie said, just close the pit lane entry in a yellow or a safety car phase. That would be good.
Nice, simple suggestions. I'll vote for you guys to ascend to the top. There are also more procedural things, as you quite rightly called it, Jamie. With the safety car around the safety car, but the other side of the safety car, pit entry. Now, Jake, you were calling it at the time, and you could see it happening, and I expected to see it myself, and I've not watched Super Formula before, because it's, again, the same sort of thing, that if you're going to try and double stack, you want to make sure you have a decent enough gap. But that turned out to be penalties applied, and penalties applied quite late in the race before the drivers could maybe try and extend the gap or push a little bit harder. Frustrating to watch a little bit. But equally, to be a bit more positive, I was also impressed with the lack of penalties with regards to track limits and overtaking, like Lawson's move for P2 in race one. I was thinking, oh, he's going to have to give that place back after being conditioned to Formula One. In terms of that procedural stuff, how much of a difference is that in Super Formula? And do you think it was harsh on the drivers who did have to double stack in the safety car window?
One of the things I will say about my time in Super Formula as a commentator is that the driving standards and the officialdom of Super Formula has always been very black and white. It's always been very clear cut. You know, this is where we draw the line. This is what's acceptable and this is what's not. And you rarely get the sort of same similar inconsistency that you'll see in other paddocks. You know, it's very, very clear what is and isn't allowed as far as a driver is concerned. Now, for someone like Liam Lawson to come in to Super Formula and do a move that is kind of the norm, really, in European racing, you kind of see it a lot. And sometimes it gets a token slap on the wrist or, you know, a penalty or whatever. And, you know, in Super Formula, it's very clear. No, you can't do that. That would have been a bit of a shock to the system a little bit, because he's seen the leader, Toshiki Oyu, do the same thing. And he actually said in his interview afterwards, well, he did it, so I didn't see any problem why I couldn't do it. But the difference is, you know, Toshiki Oyu was the leader. You know, he's allowed to control the pace under safety car. That's the difference. And it was very, very clear, particularly that Liam Lawson and Senna Sakaguchi were doing it to gain an advantage. And yeah, okay, you're going to try it. But at the same time, Super Formula is not stupid. You know, the officialdom know what is and isn't acceptable. So yeah, they're going to give a penalty. Yes, it's harsh, But then at the same time, their argument is two drivers were going out of their way to try and manipulate a result. That's the reading of that rule. That's the reading of that situation. Now, you can agree with it or you can disagree with it, but the rules and the decision making is black and white. And that's what I like about the way things are run in Super Formula. Whether you agree with the rule or not, the consistency is what counts. At the end of the day, yes, you're not necessarily going to agree with every rule that's given to you. But at the end of the day, if the officials can't carry out those rules consistently and clearly, then you've got nothing but chaos. And that's where Super Formula always has actually really excelled in comparison to other championships. You know, they get it right because they follow that same path every time.
Jake, you're going to be telling me that you don't enjoy watching the F3 champion get decided on the pit wall when they start deciding who finished where. That's ridiculous. You wouldn't rule in motorsport.
As a racing fan, it's so frustrating, especially when I'm massive mates with both Victor Martin and Oliver Behrman. That was so horrible to sit there and watch. You know, two of my best mates in the world of single-seaters going through agony. Am I the champion? Is he the champion? No, I completely agree with you. But no, when you're in the heat of the moment, when the adrenaline's rushing and you need to know, you know, am I allowed to get away with this or not? You know, you need to know where the line is. And Super Formula has always drawn that line very clearly.
Well, I very much appreciate it. And it was, as a newcomer to it, very nice to see, although I do think the decision was a little bit too late. But we'll go too long if we focus a bit too much. But you did say it's about the rookies coming in, Jake, that Liam Lawson might not know the rules. But we also had Chen Bolt-Bassey, Raoul Heimann coming in, the last year's Super Formula Lights champion. And this word pronunciation gets wrong. Kazuko Kotaka? Also making the step up?
That's not too bad.
Oh, and yeah. Point scoring debut as well. The newcomers into Super Formula this year, Jake, what are you making of them and what do you think we're going to see this year?
It's a good question. So far, I think, you know, Chen Bolt-Bassey is going to have perhaps a very difficult season. Yes, he scored points in his debut, so the talent is clearly there. But you've got to remember his team is still kind of rebuilding, regrouping. They're having a very tough season just by going at it. It's effectively their second season, but it's a completely different challenge now because they had support from Red Bull last year. Now that's switched over to Team Mugen. So they're kind of having to completely rebrand. It's not going to be an easy year for Chen Bolt-Bassey at all, partly because of the team, partly because of his inexperience, partly because Super Formula is the kind of championship where you can have a great race one race and a terrible race the next week. You know, it's so difficult to be consistent in this championship, probably harder than any other form of single-seaters, I would say. I mean, look at last year. We had 7 different winners in 9 races. That's unbelievably tough to be consistent and strong all the way through. So you have to really make it count, and it's tough to do that. He's going to find it difficult. Kakuno Shinoda, I think, is going to find it slightly easier. He had a very difficult opening weekend with Dandelion. He's definitely got pace, though. We saw in Super GT last year, you know, that kid can really drive. So once he gets the hang of it, probably by about race 4, race 5, I think you're going to see some real flashes of brilliance from him. I think he'll challenge for the podium more than once over the season. Raoul Heimann, it's hard to tell. You know, B-Max has literally gone from having one car to having two cars, and that's a massive upscale in your operation. Whether that's going to hamper Raoul Heimann over the course of the season as they start to get used to that or not remains to be seen. It's going to be tough whichever way you look at it. But I think he'll score points over the year. I think he'll have his moments. It is going to be a hard season. You know, there's no two ways about that. And Super Formula challenges a driver probably more than any other because it's so unique. You know, this car is not like any other single-seater on the planet. It's very much its own unique product. There's very much its own unique sporting code, its sporting format, and you've got to get used to it. And it's a real challenge. It's probably as close to Formula One as any feeder series is in terms of how close to the aesthetic overall product that you can get. I mean, Formula 2 was obviously on the same weekend, yes, but I think in terms of the speed of the cars, the competitive nature of the drivers, the standard of the drivers, I would actually say Super Formula is closer to Formula 2, closer to Formula 1 then. So it is going to be tricky for the rookies to establish because it's going to be very similar, very akin to a rookie season in Formula 1.
I did like Liam Lawson's pre-race interview when he did mention that it's just everything's so different and the teams are operating more professionally than he was used to. And aside from that, looking back on the 2022 championship standings, thanks a lot, Wikipedia, it seems that the pecking order is pretty much the same, not the same, but quite similar, Jamie. And I know you were mentioning before, texting, that we've got the likes of Yamamoto and Kobayashi, who will be looking to turn the fortunes around from what they saw in the test, the preseason test this was. But this weekend looks like it's more of the same. Is that the best way to interpret it, or is it just too difficult to see?
Yeah, it is a difficult one to read because that preseason test at Suzuka in early March, we did see Nojiri and Hirakawa struggling. We didn't really see that much of Liam Lawson either, to be honest. He was pretty, speaking to him at that test, he was quite cautious about his prospects. He said, it's going to take me a while to challenge Nojiri. If you said, oh, well, actually, you're going to beat him, first time of trying, I'm sure there's no way he would have believed you at that stage. And equally, we saw Naoki Yamamoto had amazing long run pace, was consistently fast. Kanmi Kobayashi was fastest on the second day. Even Kazuya Oshima, who didn't score a point last year, topped a session. So all this evidence was mounting of a big change in the order because of this new car. Essentially, this was a nice summary from Toshiro Ichise, who's Nojiri's engineer. Basically said the teams last year that were struggling with understeer are now in the right window because the new car is more oversteery. Basically, it has less downforce at the rear than the old one. And the teams that were in the right window before, now they've suddenly got this massive oversteer they've never had to deal with before. So the prediction was that that was going to carry over into Fuji. But then for whatever reason, I think even the engineers themselves don't always like understand fully why these things happen the way they do. But we saw the teams that we were strong last year, Mugen, Impul, at least with Hirakawa, Toms, at least with Miata, they were the ones, that were quickest. And the KCMGs and Nakajima Racings of this world, I mean, they had, they weren't too bad, but, they weren't anywhere near challenging for the win. So, yeah, Suzuka is obviously a different challenge. Conditions will be very different from the test because it will be much warmer. So I don't think we can say with any certainty that it's going to, go back to how it was in testing. I think actually Rene mentioned Tsuboi earlier and the fact that he was the big favourite going to last year. And then, they turned out to have a pretty miserable season at Inking. So I think that's a bit of a word of caution for Yamamoto and Kobayashi. Look at Tsuboi last year. You can't take testing form for granted, and they've just got a mountain to climb, I think, to get to the stage where, with this weekend format, with such limited running, to get to the stage where they can really threaten Mugen especially.
Let's see how Suzuka goes, because like I say, it's the next race, and possibly get a better idea of the order when you get to compare things. I know we've already focused on Liam Lawson quite a lot, Rene, but I think that's kind of understandable, one, with the potential F1 link, and it is the feeder series, yep, to F1 that we are generally talking, yep, about here, and also just, yep, the first rookie to win the first race in half a century, I think the stat was. AlphaTauri looking at maybe having a new driver next year, maybe two new drivers from what we heard from Alex Yates last year when mentioning Red Bull's contract adherence policy, let's call it. How likely do you think it is going to be for Liam Lawson to join Formula One with this upcoming season as his way to demonstrate his skills?
Well, Jim, obviously I don't have a crystal ball over here. And we have seen how things can develop. Like last year, Colton Herta was due to drive at AlphaTauri, but he didn't get his super license. And then maybe Lawson could step in, but he was sent to Japan. And then this happened, and then that happened. And then Ricardo had to lost his McLaren seat. And then, like, the key point is everything can happen in like this amount of time. Liam Lawson has done the exact right thing by winning a race and scoring decent points in the second race. He would have been on the podium. Hell, he could have even been second if it wasn't for Shota Tsuboi driving in front of him and not having that 5-second penalty. So Liam Lawson has done everything he's needed to do. I think we don't know what has been said to him by Dr. Helmut Marko, but Dr. Helmut Marko wants to see drivers win races, period. Pierre Gasly did in 2017, and he got the knock before the Formula One season even ended. So I wouldn't be surprised if Liam Lawson would drive in a Formula One car in an actual Formula One race this season. I wouldn't be surprised. Though having said that, I mean, Nick is a fellow Dutchman, and I know Nick pretty well. So I have to defend Nick on that, because Nick is a fantastic racing driver, and he finally got his shot in Formula One. He should have had that one like 5 years ago. It's difficult to adapt in a team which is struggling like AlphaTauri at the moment. I mean, Tsunoda has been there for 3 years now. This is his third season, and he can't quite find the things to turn it around. It would be the most honest thing to give Nick time and to watch him develop everything. Having said that, I think it's a major disadvantage for Nick that he hasn't been on the Red Bull team like in the junior days. He's just there. He joined like 3 months ago. If Red Bull continues like the path they always did, like with Verstappen, with Vettel, with name them all, then the possibility of having Liam Lawson in Formula One in 2024 is very, very big. And after this weekend of racing, it's like 99.8%, if you ask me.
I have to agree with you, René. I genuinely am of the opinion that, looking at that comparison that you've made, I personally think that it's very likely, maybe even midway through 2023, that we could see a Liam Lawson Yuki Tsunoda swap. I genuinely can see that. I could forecast that maybe Liam Lawson will end up in the Formula One team, and Yuki Tsunoda will end up in Super Formula. I can see that. If not for the beginning of next year, then possibly even midway through this year.
Just a reminder. In 2017, when Gasly was promoted mid-season, the Toro Rosso lineup comprised Daniel Kvyat, who was obviously already on the way down, having been demoted from the senior Red Bull team, and Carlos Sainz, who was obviously looking for any which way to get out of the Red Bull program at that point. So I think it's a slightly different kettle of fish to 2017. Tsunoda's actually had quite a good start to the F1 season, and even Franz Tost was quoted as saying he thinks that he could be ready for a promotion to the senior team in maybe 2025. So I think a lot depends on what Tsunoda and De Vries do, probably the sort of first half of the season. And I think Lawson needs to keep the pressure on. You know, he's obviously got off to the best possible start, but Gasly kind of peaked in the middle of the year when these decisions are being made. So Lawson can't peak too soon. He's won a single race, but he's got to win more, and he's got to keep the pressure on.
Ultimately, the only person who knows the real answer to this is Helmut Marko.
Yeah.
That's the reality of it.
Yeah.
But the good thing is, by winning the first race already, having 9 races in the season, there are 7 races to go, that if he wins one more, he equals Gasly. So this is his, like, say, his thing he can use in Red Bull management, like saying, yeah, you promoted Gasly with 2 wins. I've got 2 wins now as well. Getting back to that Tsunoda swap thing Jake just said, I believe that as long as Honda will be involved in Formula One, they will try to have a Japanese driver in Formula One, like they always did with Satoru Nakajima, with Takuma Sato, name them all. They will split with Red Bull after the 2025 season. So I feel like Nick's position is more in danger, though I hope it's not, because I like the chap very much. But I like we all said, I can see Liam Lawson drive in a Formula One race this season if he continues like this. And this has been a mega weekend, like very, very big.
Well, 2024, it's going to be potentially Iwasa or Liam Lawson. So either way, Japan wins. Well, that's enough questions for me, because the Feeder Series podcast is for you, viewers and listeners. We're going to move on to the hashtag AskFS part of the show. If this is your first time watching or listening, you can get involved by using the hashtag AskFS on Twitter, joining our Discord and using the podcast questions channel, commenting on our YouTube videos, or by keeping an eye out for our Instagram posts and stories. First question here, René, isn't really a question. It's more of a complaint. But I know when talking in the Feeder Series group chat that you had similar confusion. But Mary Louise Rans on Twitter said, yeah, I'm annoyed I sat down to watch Super Formula this afternoon to find out the subscription I paid for on the YouTube channel was made inactive. I'm right fuming. Now, you mentioned something in the group chat that it was something that happened last year as well. It's a bit frustrating. Is there more of a story to this that you know?
Well, no. I only know that, if you are in Japan and you watch Super Formula or Super GT, then you're sorted. If you're not in Japan and you want to watch Super Formula or Super GT, then you might run into a bit of trouble. Last year, you could have a monthly subscription of like 99 cents or something like that. It was very cheap to watch all the Super Formula qualifying sessions and races live, I believe, which was a good deal because it was like 10 races last year, so say it was 20 sessions for £12. It's fair. But this year it was unclear what would happen and where we could see it and if we could watch it somewhere. Back in 2020 and 2021, there was Red Bull TV, which was for free, which was awesome. But this year we have to swap to Motorsport TV, I guess. We just had the commentator and the color commentator just on the pod. So I think that would be the best option for anyone. Just go to motorsport.tv. Would cost you like 40 a year, I believe. But then you've got Super Formula, Super GT, Super everything. So yeah, that's basically the road I've chosen because, like Jake said, I can't be in Japan all the time as well because I run my own business guiding drivers management. So, yeah, I can't go to every Super Formula race as well. So that would be my, that's the road I drive this year.
This is from Stein, MS4 Supremacy on Discord. To Jake, how are things different in commentating on Super Formula, Formula Original, Middle East / F4 UAE, and the one that I'm most interested in here, Jim speaking there, FIA karting?
Good question. I guess with Super Formula, it's harder because I'm not there. So immediately that has a bit of a difficulty. Unfortunately, the budget doesn't quite stretch to fly me out to Japan every time. I do want to go to one race each year moving forward, if this is going to be something that's quite permanent. And I would like to think that, you know, 10 years from now, I'm still doing Super Formula. It's one of my favorite championships on the planet and definitely my favorite single-seater championship. It is tougher because you really want to feel the vibe of it. And the way I do things as a commentator and really feel the vibe of things is I get into the paddock, I shake hands with people, I chat to people, I try and figure out, you know, how does this work? You know, what's the atmosphere within a team, what's a driver's modus operandi, and it's very hard to do that when you're distant from it. And I'm more distant from Super Formula than any other championship I work on the planet, so it is harder. But the good thing is that the product of Super Formula is so strong that the racing is never dull. I have yet to commentate on a dull Super Formula race, which is quite a big thing to say about a single seater championship. You always get one or maybe two really difficult races to watch a year. And I have yet to have that from Super Formula, which is quite a revelation, actually. There's always something really intriguing going on. There's always something really interesting in terms of the tire strategy, in terms of the battles for position. If someone goes early, who's going to go late on tires? You know, how much of a difference is lapping a car at a particular point or overtaking a car at a particular point? This guy's crashed out, safety cars come. How is that going to impact on the race? Super Formula is unique. There's no other form of single-seater championship like it on the planet. And that's what you invest in. As a commentator, that's what you know going in. You know, this isn't going to be like another Formula Regional Championship. It's not going to be like another Formula 4 Championship. It's completely in its own universe. It's its own microcosm. So when you're at an FIA karting meeting, yes, you can shake hands with people and you can chat to the teams and figure things out. Same with what I did in Formula Regional Middle East and F4 Dubai. But having said that, Super Formula, for me, it's got that same sort of glamour effect as Formula One. It's got that same sort of elan to it. It's the pedigree of it that makes it exciting. And that's where I get my energy to do it from.
Energy spilled over into the podcast as well, Jake. What a terrific answer that was.
I can't resist it. You know, this is a sport that gives me so much. I'm so proud to do it.
This question is from CM Parfait 16. Question to Jamie. How do you rate Tepei Nottori? Was he too unfortunate missing out on a F2 ride back then? And does he have the potential to do very well once he gets to Super Formula / GT500?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So Tepei Nottori should have raced in F2 last year. I think he was kind of led down the garden path by Buzz, his sponsor. But the deal fell apart. He had a contract with Trident, so I think it was the seat that went to Vershaw in the end, if I remember correctly. So he was really unlucky. Basically, he told everybody in Japan, "I'm going to F2. This is it for me." Obviously, it fell apart, and he had no fallback option. He could have raced in Super GT last year, so now he's getting his chance belatedly with Kondo Racing, which is a whole other story in Super GT land. I know people do rate Nattori quite highly. He won Super Formula Lights in 2021, beating Giuliano Alesi, among others. Ren Sato is also in that field. And I do think he's going to make an impression. I know JP de Oliveira, his teammate in Super GT this year, has been pretty impressed. Like, he's been up to speed very quickly. And he even already tested the Nissan 500 car. And I heard from one of the engineers who was, you know, helping to run the cars at that test, that he was actually the most impressive of the four guys they had that day. So I do envisage a very bright future for Nattori in Super GT, but because he's now a Nissan driver, it's probably going to be Super GT rather than Super Formula, which is a little bit of a shame. But still, you know, just ask Ronnie Quinterelli or Sugio Matsuda, you can have a great career driving for Nissan in Super GT. So we shouldn't feel too sorry for him.
Question on Discord from Rafael: some thoughts on Chen Bollock-Bass's performance this weekend. Does he have potential for better races in the future? Which to me, Rene, sounds like he was having his bad races this weekend, whereas I thought it didn't do too terribly for a rookie in his first rounds.
Well, Jim, I think we need to invite him on the podcast. So, Jim, if you're watching, please join us, because we've got a hard time in pronouncing your surname. Because I've got a few Turkish mates over here, and they tell me it's like Bollock-Bass. But we're always saying Bollock-Bassi because we see an I and an O and a U. But please come along this podcast and tell us how we pronounce your surname. That would be incredible. Now, going back to the races, actually, Jem had a wonderful race. Race one, it was picture perfect for him. It was he started, if I remember correctly, in row 10. I believe it was P20. And he drove up all the way to P8. On his debut race in Super Formula. So, yeah, we are talking about Liam Lawson and how incredible he raced, and it was fantastic. But bear in mind, Liam Lawson is driving for Team Mugen, which is the reigning defending champion team. Jem Bollock-Bassi, or Bollock-Bass, he can say it himself. He is driving for a team that was, nearly dead. I mean, Team Go wasn't there anymore at the end of 2022 because their Red Bull funding went to Team Mugen to get Liam Lawson in the series. So they had to start from scratch again. Now they're renamed TGM, which is Team Go Motorsport, and they're back in business. I mean, Toshiki Oyu did wonderful things this weekend. He could have been on the podium in race two. They had a double point scoring finish in race one. I think people are underestimating Jem. And I think that coming from a background of gaming, I think Jem has done wonderful things. And he's got more space to prove now. Because in Formula 2, obviously the spotlights are on you. And if you do wrong, then people will shout like, oh, he can't race and he's there because of the money or the Turkish government sponsoring him or whatever the money's coming from. But here's the thing, he's got more time, less focus from the people around. And I think that Jem could build up a great racing career here in Japan. Like Jake said, you can race here for 8 seasons, 9 seasons, 10 seasons. We had André Lotterer, we had Benoit Treluier, Loic Duval. I'm not going to compare Jem right away with those guys, but you can see where I'm heading. And I think Jem, he really has got the talent.
I echo those sentiments entirely, although I'm new to the sport, but I already know that Super Formula has such a longevity, like we spoke about earlier, before the Ask a Fest questions, where people can make a career of it, like Kevin Magnussen, who maybe will never win the championship, and maybe Jem will, but will never win the championship. But he's got a drive and he's got a career for the rest of his life. So for somebody who is doing like you and I do, playing computer games and doing simulators, to potentially turning this into a career, yeah, not so bad at all. This question's from Kaylee G on Insta. What do you think would make Super Formula more popular in Europe?
I hate to say this because the people I'm in touch with on PR side are very, very lovely. They help me all the time. But I've got the feeling Super Formula is still way too Japan focused. Like, if I read the things on Instagram, the captions, it's all in Japanese and I can't speak a word. Well, I can speak a few words Japanese, but I can't read it. So I'm like, okay, translation, you know. I think it would be good if the marketing team would focus more on Europe. If they just hired somebody, you know, like to promote them. I'm not going to say names, but without the joking around, they should focus more on Europe market, especially now with Alessi, with Jem, with Hyman. But it is a Nippon thing, Jim. It's commonly for Japan to keep it inside of Japan and think they are not relevant outside of Japan. So it's more down to their culture, I guess. But they could earn big money this year if they would market this right with Lawson, for example.
As somebody who loves the Final Fantasy series and has just completed Persona 5, I know Japan has some quirks, but I completely agree. They have got some exportable stuff, and I see Super Formula as that. So maybe not necessarily doing every post in English, but having a secondary account, which is the English version, which is then more accessible. Something like that would be tremendous. I agree.
Yeah,
I agree. This one is from, well, there's these two questions actually, Rennie, from slightly less motorsport mad and CNPathFace16, a regular question asker. Tying together, but slightly less motorsport mad's version is, which driver in the current Super Formula grid do you think would be best suited / do well in IndyCar? And CNPathFace16, with Takuma Sato potentially stepping down from IndyCar in the near future, which Japanese talent do you think will be able to fill his place next?
That's brilliant. That's a brilliant question. I haven't thought about that. Taku is like 45, 46 maybe even. So yeah. Well, Takuma Sato is obviously a Honda driver, so we have to look within the Honda teams, because obviously there's not going to be a Toyota driver replacing a Honda driver. The first name which comes into my mind is Tadasuke Makino. Makino obviously won a race in Formula 2. People know him from the days when he was there. Makino has had a rough time physically. He had meningitis and he was sidelined for like half a year, like the end of 2020 and the early days of 2021. But since then, he has been so consistently, it has been brilliant. And I believe Makino has got the ability to adapt to a new series, which he proved in Formula 2 by winning a race. Nurei Fukuzumi would be a good one as well, just for that reason. But I believe that Makino could be eventually the one to go to the United States. It wouldn't surprise me. Obviously, Takuma's fellow Sato, Ren Sato, is very, very young. I think Ren is focusing on super license points and going to Europe. But if that plan doesn't work out, he could be the one going to America as well. And hell, the American route has been more popular lately, with Alex Palou going from Super Formula to IndyCars and Raul Hyman going from Formula Regionals America to Super Formula. So it's a very, very good question. And I think we should keep this in the back of our minds for the coming months, because it although Sato is a good driver and he's a two-time winner of the Indianapolis 500, he can't stick around forever.
Keep telling Fernando Alonso that, and he keeps coming back, Rene, so you never know. Just aside on that, though, with Hyman, as you mentioned there, I know first season, so very, very different story. But do you think that is something that he'll be having in the back of his mind, that potentially going America after time in Japan? Do you think he's going to stick in Japan? Do you think he's going to try and aim for Europe?
I honestly feel like he's aiming to stay in Japan and like going the route Jake mentioned, like being there for 6, 7, 8 years. But I can also see that if an opportunity arises, he would be happy to grab it. Don't forget that Raul has been out for like 2 complete seasons. In April 2022, he drove in his first race since September 2019. So I think he would be happy for every series or every opportunity to arise. Having said that, I need to praise Raul Hyman as much as I can, because coming back from such an adversity, we can all say like, yeah, Raul is now 21st in the standings of Super Formula, and he didn't score in his debut weekend, and Lawson won the race. But what Raul has done in the past 12 months is nothing but exceptional. And B-Max, the team where he's racing for, just entered a second car, whereas Team Eugen has been on top for like the last 3 years. So bear in mind that Raul Hyman is actually a very, very, very talented racing driver.
That is all the time we have this week. Thank you, everybody, for watching and listening. I apologize so much for any of the technical problems. Hopefully it's not too pronounced as you listen and watch. If you'd like to have your question asked on a future episode, use the hashtag AskFS on Twitter. Drop any questions below. If you're watching on YouTube, you can respond to our Instagram posts or stories, or you can let us know what questions you have on your mind on our Discord. Look for the podcast questions channel. And if you are watching on YouTube, dropping a like on the video, leaving a comment, and subscribing to the channel all really helps us out. And if you are listening, leaving a review on the podcast platform you're listening on is greatly appreciated. Finally, check out feederseries.net for more Feeder Series insight, and follow feeder_series, FS Americas, and Feeder Series Now on Twitter. You can find the links to all of that, plus the Twitter accounts for myself and everyone else on the podcast, in the YouTube description or the podcast show notes. Until next time, we've been the Feeder Series Podcast. Goodbye.